weren't serious when you said we should sell Tyersal Park.
I don't see any other choice, Philip answered.
Why don't you buy us all out? You have the majority stake, and we'll sell you our shares at a family discount. This way, we all can keep our rooms and Tyersal Park can be like our private family hotel.
Alex looked up from her aromatic chicken rice. What on earth was Victoria suggesting? She had no intention of selling her share at a discount.
Philip shook his head as he swallowed a mouthful of fried rice.
First of all, I can't afford to buy you all out, but that's beside the point. What would I do with this house? I live in Sydney most of the year. I can't be bothered to maintain this white elephant.
Cat, wouldn't you like to have Tyersal Park? You can afford it, can't you? Victoria asked her sister hopefully.
Everything about this place reminds me of Mummy, and I'd be too sad,
Catherine mused, picking at her noodles without much of an appetite. Alex spoke up.
Cat's right. This house just isn't the same now that Mummy's gone. Look, Mummy clearly wanted us to sell it. She knew none of us would really want to take it on.
Victoria looked distressed.
Then what happens to me? Am I supposed to move into a flat? Goodness gracious, I'd feel like I'm suddenly part of the new poor.
Victoria, no one cares anymore, Alex argued.
Look at all our friends, our cousins, the Siens, the Tans, the Shangs. No one we know still lives in their original houses. Boytonzak, Yew Villa, 38 Newton Road, the House of Jade. All the great estates are long gone. Even Command House is now part of the bloody UBS. I've lived in a 3-bedroom condo for decades, and I love it.
Harry nodded in agreement. I dream of the luxury of living someplace small, like one of those HDB flats. Why, I hear that most of them even have elevators these days.
Harry Leong has obviously never set foot in a Housing and Development Board flat in his entire life, but like so many oblivious one percenters, is always fantasizing about downsizing and moving in to an HDB flat, since I'm entitled to one.
Alex looked around the table at each of her siblings.
A property of this size has not come on the market in almost a century. This is like Central Park, going up for sale in New York. In this neighborhood, the going rate is $1,000 per square foot. We have more than 2.8 million square feet here, and that adds up to $2.8 billion. But I think developers would pay even more, and there's going to be a bidding war. Trust me, I've been flipping properties in Hong Kong for years. We have to orchestrate this very methodically, because this is our one chance to make an absolute killing.
Victoria gave a dramatic sigh, although secretly she was already thinking of the cute topiaries she would put on the doorstep of her townhouse in London.
Okay, so let's sell the house. But we can't appear to want to sell it any time soon. That would be unseemly. I think we should wait at least 6 months. We wouldn't want to look like greedy pigs,
Felicity stated as she sucked on a fish bone. Philip took a sip of his coffee and winced.
All right, then. I'm heading back to Sydney tonight. I can't stand another day without a proper flat white. I'll be back in 6 months, and we can officially put the house on the market.
Just then, Arling entered the dining room with an announcement.
Something just arrived that I think you all should see.
Two Gurkha guards wheeled a large flatbed dolly into the room. Piled on it was a mountain of colorful ribboned boxes, all from Ladurie in Paris. There were boxes and boxes of chocolates and truffles, macaroons and cakes, all manner of delicious confections from the legendary dessert maker. Crowning this elaborate display was a craquembouche with a large embossed gold card affixed to the front. Arling took the card and handed it to Philip. He tore it open and began to laugh.
What is it?
Eleanor asked excitedly.
Philip read the card aloud. Bright Star Properties wishes the Young family prosperity and good tidings in the coming year of the goat. May we respectfully extend an all-cash tender offer of $1.88 billion for the purchase of Tyersall Park.
Felicity gasped, while Alex turned to Victoria with a smirk.
I don't think we have to worry about looking like greedy pigs.
Chapter 10, 28 Cluny Park Road, Singapore. Kitty was floating on an inflatable lounger in the middle of her pool in an alluring one-shoulder cutout Arex swimsuit when she heard the car returning to the house. She had been waiting impatiently for the past hour, after sending a maid to the bookstore to buy a whole stack of the new issue of Tattle, which had just been released this morning. Kitty paddled her lounger over to the edge of the pool as the maid came rushing down the stone steps with a stack of magazines in her arms, followed by the driver, who was also carrying a big stack.
"What took you so long?" Kitty asked. "I'm sorry, ma'am. We got there before the bookstore opened, but they had to unpack the magazines from the boxes and scan them into the computer first. But here, we bought all 40 copies," she said, handing Kitty the top copy from her stack.
It was wrapped in plastic, with a big gold panel over the cover, and words that screamed, "Our wildest issue ever."
Kitty felt her heart race as she tried to tear into the plastic, desperate to get to the magazine. She couldn't wait to see her photo on the cover under the headline, "Princess Kitty."
The lounger wobbled, and her wet fingers kept slipping against the plastic.
"Here, let me help you," the maid said, sensing her mistress's excitement.
She ripped through the plastic, slipped the glossy magazine out of its sleeve, and handed it to Kitty. Kitty stared at the cover, her face changing from anticipation to absolute horror. Staring back at her on the cover of Tattle was a photograph of Colette and her husband Lucien, seated at a breakfast table with a huge orangutan.
"Ah! What is this? This is the wrong issue!"
Kitty screamed from her reclining position.
"No, ma'am, this is the new issue, brand new. I saw them take it out of the boxes."
Kitty scrutinized the cover where the headline read, "Lords of the Jungle, the Earl and Countess of Palliser."
"No, no, no. This can't be real."
Kitty sat up on the lounger, tearing through the magazine maniacally and getting the pages wet as she searched for her story. What happened to her beautiful photo shoot with Nigel Barker? The photos of Harvard kissing her? They were nowhere to be found. Instead, the feature article was a 10-page spread dedicated to pictures of Colette and Lucien's visit to a conservation center in Indonesia. There were photos of Colette hosting a tea party for a family of orangutans at a wrought iron table by the edge of a river. Colette trekking through the rainforest with a group of primatologists, and Colette cradling a baby orangutan. By this point, Kitty's lounger had drifted to the middle of the pool, and she screeched at the maid.
"Get me my phone!"
Kitty jabbed at her phone angrily, calling Oliver Sin. It rang a few times before he picked up.
"Ollie's psychic hotline," he answered jokingly.
"Have you seen the latest Tattle yet?"
Kitty said, her voice shaking with fury.
"No. Did it come out today? I'm in Hong Kong this week, so I haven't seen it yet. Congratulations. How does it look?"
"Congratulations? Go look at the magazine and tell me how I fucking look on the cover!"
Kitty screamed before hanging up.
God, what now? Oliver thought to himself. Did they end up going with a photo that was slightly less flattering to her surgically sculpted nose? There was no way he could find a copy of the magazine in Hong Kong, but maybe the issue was already online. He went to his browser and logged on to tattle.com.sg. Within seconds, the page loaded and the cover of Tattle popped up.
"Oh, for fuck's sake," Oliver cursed as he began to scan through the story. "Eco-warrior princess, an exclusive interview with Colette, the Countess of Palliser. The Countess of Palliser enters the garden of the British Embassy in Singapore with no pomp or circumstance, no personal assistant or PR handler in sight. She shakes my hand and immediately starts fretting that I'm seated in the sun. Am I too hot?
Would I like to swap seats? Has no one brought me a drink? This was not the woman I was expecting to meet. The former Colette Bing, once China's most influential fashion blogger, with over 55 million followers, is today sitting before me in a simple yet lovely floral dress with not a dab of makeup on her face or any jewelry except for a simple wedding band of Welsh gold. I ask her who designed her dress, and she laughs.
This is a Laura Ashley dress that I got out of a bin at an Oxfam thrift shop in the village near where I live.
It's the first hint that as ordinary as the Countess's life seems to be, things are not all that ordinary. The village she is referring to is Barchester, perhaps one of the most charming in all of England, and home for the Countess and her husband, Lucien Montagu Scott, the Earl of Palliser, is a charming old vicarage with 10 bedrooms tucked away at Gatherum Castle, the 35,000-acre Barsetshire estate of a father-in-law, the Duke of Glencora. I've heard rumours that the interior designer, Henrietta Spencer Churchill, of the Blenheim Palace Spencer Churchills, has been busy transforming the cottage into an Elysian paradise. But when I try to ask the Countess about it, she simply says that the house is being refurbished and redirects me to the matter at hand.
My life is not that interesting. Let's talk about Indonesia, she says with an effervescent smile.
Indonesia is the reason the Earl and Countess have been spending so much time in these parts of late. The Earl, a renowned environmental activist, and the Countess actually met there.
I was a bit adrift, traveling to various spa resorts on my own for a few months, the Countess admits. By chance, I met Lucien in Bali, and he told me that he was on the way to a remote part of North Sumatra. I decided on a whim to follow him.
It was a decision that changed her life forever.
Lucien brought me to an orangutan rescue center, and it was my first exposure to the terrible environmental tragedy that's been unfolding here. Sumatran orangutans are classified as critically endangered, and the population is being decimated, along with scores of other species, because of deforestation and illegal poaching. Infant orangutans are being sold to the pet trade, and the way they do this is by killing the mother first. For every baby orangutan sold, it's estimated that 6 to 8 adult orangutans die in the process of capturing them. Can you imagine?
The Countess says, her normally pearl-white complexion flushed with fury. What she witnessed those first weeks in Sumatra has given the Countess a singular mission in life, to spread awareness of this environmental tragedy and to advocate for change.
People talk about the Amazon, but it's horrific what's being done in this part of Southeast Asia. The main culprit is the palm oil industry. Everyone should stop consuming products that contain palm oil. In the quest for more land to create more palm oil plantations, ancient forests are being burned down, destroyed completely, and we are losing so many species that will never be seen again. Orangutans, one of our planet's most precious animals, could be extinct in the wild within 25 years, the Countess says, with tears in her eyes. And beyond this, look at what the massive bushfires and deforestation have done environmentally to the region. Look what it's doing to the air quality right here in Singapore. You can feel the effects of these forest fires right now if you just take a deep breath.
At this point in the interview, the Countess's husband walks out onto the terrace to join us. He is a tall, blindingly handsome blonde fellow who immediately reminds me of Wesley from The Princess Bride. I'm surprised by how down-to-earth the Earl is, and when he talks about his new wife, his face lights up like a love-struck teen.
Colette's dedication to the orangutan babies, how she handled them, how she wasn't afraid to get her hands dirty, and really just give her all to the cause, really surprised me. It 100% made me fall in love with her. I knew I had found my eco-warrior princess. And after our time together at the camp, I never wanted to let her go.
Our mission is just beginning. There's just so much to do. And that's why we've decided to move to Singapore for the next few years.
the Countess reveals. This will be an excellent base for our work all over the region, the Earl chimes in.
Are the Earl and Countess going to commandeer one of Singapore's toniest properties?
I don't know if we'll actually be here all that much, so I think we'll just lease a little flat someplace very central, the Countess says.
In case you are misled into thinking that the palaces have completely hidden away their ermine robes and tiaras, in favor of cargo pants and tavers, Colette reveals that she's in the midst of organizing an event that will no doubt send every reader of this article scrambling for their best jewels.
I'm going to host a fundraising ball in aid of orangutan rescue with my friends, the Duchess of Oxbridge and Cornelia Guest. Both of them are dedicated conservationists doing such amazing rescue work with animals. Alice with endangered sea turtles, and Cornelia with miniature horses. Hopefully, we'll have friends from all over the world jetting in for a ball that will be inspired by Marie Helen de Rothschild's legendary Proust ball at Chateau Ferrier.
If history is to be repeated again, the Enchanted Evening promises to be the most highly anticipated gala of the spring charity season, and hopefully is the start of many good things to come from this gorgeous, aristocratic, and conscious couple. When he was done reading, Oliver immediately called Violet Poon at Tattle. Can you explain why there's a fucking monkey on the cover of your magazine this month instead of Kitty Bing?
Oh, Oliver, I was going to call you. It was a last-minute mandate that came from my boss. They're running this cover story on every edition of Tattle around the world this month. It's such an important story.
So what happens to Kitty's important story?
Well, since Colette was on the cover this month, we felt like a little, diplomacy was in order. Of course we couldn't put Kitty's story in the same issue. I mean, she is her stepmother. We wouldn't want to offend either of them. But you know, I adore Kitty's cover. Those Nigel pictures are just beyond. We're going to save it for later in the year. It'll actually be much better in the fall, don't you think?
Wouldn't it be a fabulous cover for the September issue? Oliver went silent for a moment, trying to figure out how he was going to explain all this to Kitty.
I hope Kitty won't be upset about this. We will give her the star treatment, I promise. We'll throw a cover launch party at some boutique.
Upset? Violet, I don't think you have any clue what you've done. You've just started World War III.
Oh, dear.
I have to go. I need to see if I can disarm the nuclear warhead now. Oliver hung up with Violet, took a deep breath, and called Kitty's number. He found her eerily composed when he explained the whole situation to her. I actually think this is going to be much better for you, Kitty. Landing a fall cover is more prestigious. Think of the September issue of Vogue. That's always the biggest issue of the year. You'll get so much more exposure. Far less people will see the March issue of Tattle, and to be honest, it's a ghastly cover. Look at that mother orangutan and her saggy brown nipples.
Did you read the article? Kitty said quietly.
I did.
So you know that Colette is moving to Singapore with her husband?
The royal couple?
Kitty, they aren't royal.
Oh, yeah? So tell me why they were getting the royal treatment at your great-aunt's funeral. Don't try to deny it.
I saw the pictures of Colette with the Dowager Sultana of Perawak on the official royal Instagram. You lied to me. You promised me she wouldn't be there.
Kitty, I had no clue that her husband's family knew my great-uncle Alfred's family. This isn't some conspiracy.
It's not? Then why does it feel like she's doing everything she can to outshine me? She gets invited to the funeral of the century. She steals my Tattle cover. And now she's throwing this big charity ball in Singapore to raise money for her damn monkeys.
Those orangutans need all the help they can get, Kitty.
That's not the point. Colette is hosting this huge ball so that all of Singapore society can come out and curtsy at her feet like she's the queen of fucking Sheba. You know she's doing all this as revenge, don't you? She's just trying to insult me over and over again.
Oliver sighed in exasperation. Kitty,
Don't you think you're blowing this out of proportion? You haven't even met Colette. You have no idea what's going through her mind. I really don't think this girl has any interest in insulting you.
Of course she's insulted me, and she's insulted my husband. Did you notice that she didn't mention Jack once? Who do you think is funding all her monkey business?
Kitty, you're just building all this up in your head and sending yourself into a tailspin.
No, I'm sending you into a tailspin. I want you to get me a title. I want a proper royal title that's higher ranking than Colette's.
Oliver sighed. Kitty, getting you any sort of title is going to take time. Living in Singapore, you could aim for an honorific from one of the Malay royal families. But you'd have to do an obscene amount of sucking up. Best case scenario, if you play your cards right, you may be able to receive a title within a few years.
No, I'm not waiting that long. I don't care what you have to do, how much you have to spend. I want a title, and I want it before Colette's stupid monkey ball.
That's just not realistic, Kitty. I mean, I do know a few bisexual Italian princes that might be willing, in exchange for certain financial incentives, to marry you, but you'll have to divorce Jack.
Kitty scoffed. What are you talking about? I'm not divorcing my husband.
Then I'm afraid there's really no way to get you a royal title within a month.
Well, then you're out of a job. I'm not going to pay your retainer anymore. In fact, I'm stopping payment on everything right now. The Nigel Barker photo shoot fees, all the money you've spent decorating my house, everything.
Kitty, stop being unreasonable. That's close to $100 million. You know I'll be on the hook for all those bills if you don't pay them. Oliver sputtered in alarm.
Exactly. So get me that title. What's higher ranking than a countess? A duchess? A princess? An empress? I don't care if you need to bribe Prince Bibimbap of Korea. I just want Colette to have to curtsy to me the next time I encounter her. I want to wipe the floor with her face!
Kitty screamed. Kitty, please calm down. Kitty? Oliver realized she had hung up on him. A wave of fear suddenly passed through his body. Kitty was one client he could not risk losing. His monthly retainer from her was the one thing that kept the wolves at bay. Unbeknownst to the Youngs, the Shangs, or the rest of the world, Oliver's family had fallen on hard times ever since Barings went bust in 1995. Most of the CN portfolio had been invested with the storied investment firm in London that were bankers to Britain's most aristocratic families, including the Queen. But after the firm went bankrupt, ironically due to a rogue trader based in Singapore, the CNs, along with every Barings investor, had been wiped out. What remained in the other CN accounts was a pittance, about $10 million, and all that went into maintaining his grandmother Rosemary's lifestyle. It was her money rightfully, and she was entitled to live out her last years in comfort. But it meant that there would be barely anything left for her five children. The Sians had been one of Singapore's largest landowners in the 1900s, but there was only one property left now. His grandmother's sprawling bungalow on Dalvey Road that was maybe worth $35 million, 40 if the market ever recovered. Split five ways between her children, that meant his father would only inherit $6 or $7 million at the most if the house was ever sold. Far, far less than what his parents were now in debt for. For years they had taken out loan after loan, and Oliver had spent his youth living the life of a rich man's son, sent abroad to the best schools money could buy, from La Rosie to Oxford. But after the Barings crash, he found himself in the unthinkable position of having to work for a living. Oliver had always existed among the world's 0.1% crowd, and very few people understood the special hell of having to live in a world where every single person around you was staggeringly rich, but you were not. No one knew the degrees of subterfuge he took to keep up appearances for the sake of his family and career. There were the ballooning interest payments on all their bank loans. There were 10 credit cards that he had to play Russian roulette with month after month. There were the mortgages on his parents' hutong in Beijing, his flat in London, and the condo in Singapore. Last year had been the worst. when his mother had been forced to sell off the legendary Sien jade brooch along with other family heirlooms in order to pay for unexpected medical expenses. The bills kept coming, and they were endless. And now, Kitty was threatening to renege on her gargantuan decorating bills. Bills he had signed off on. If he couldn't work a miracle and get Kitty her title, he knew his whole life, his family, his career, his reputation, all would come crashing down. Chapter 11. Tyersal Park, Singapore. Walking into lunch the next day, Rick and Rachel found that the dining room had been transformed into a makeshift situation room. Rolling bulletin boards had been placed around the room, and the dining table was lined with stacks of documents and various brochures, and 7 or 8 young staffers huddled over spreadsheets on their laptops. Ah-Ling entered with another package that had just arrived and noticed the baffled couple.
"Oh, Nikki, lunch is being served on the terrace today."
"Who are these people?" Nick whispered.
"They're from Uncle Harry's office. They're helping out with all the house office,"
Ah-Ling responded, giving Nick a look that clearly registered her disapproval. Nick and Rachel went out to the terrace to find a much smaller gathering of relatives. The Akaras had flown back to Bangkok earlier in the morning, while most of the Chings had left the day before. The only out-of-town guests that remained were Alex and Alistair, since they were both shareholders in the property. While Nick and Rachel stood by the buffet table arrayed with different dishes, Victoria spoke up as she looked over a prospectus.
"This offer from the Far East people is an insult. $2.5 billion, paid out over 5 years. Do they think we fell off the turnip truck yesterday?"
"Let's not even bother responding," Alex declared.
She looked up as Nick and Rachel sat down at the wrought iron table with their lunch plates.
"Nikki, do you have any idea what time your father will be here? We have so much to go over with him."
"Dad's back in Sydney."
"What? When did he leave?"
"Last night. Didn't he tell you he was heading home?"
"Yes, but we assumed he would have changed his plans now that the offers are flooding in." "Ugh, that irresponsible boy. We're in the midst of a bidding war, and he knows we can't make any moves without him," Felicity huffed.
"Dad's become quite set in his ways, and he really missed the coffee from this cafe he goes to every morning in Rose Bay," Nick tried explaining.
"There are billions of dollars at stake here, and he's complaining about the coffee? As if Folgers crystals here aren't good enough for him," Victoria scoffed.
Rachel jumped into the conversation.
"Some people really can't function without their coffee. In New York, I have to grab my usual cup at Joe Coffee on the way to work, or I won't be able to get through the morning."
"I'll never understand you coffee people,"
Victoria tut-tutted as she carefully stirred her cup of tea made from GFBOP.
Any good tea sommelier will tell you that GFBOP stands for Golden Flowery Broken Orange Pekoe Tea Leaves. But of course,
orthodox leaves she had flown in every month from a special reserve estate in Tanzania.
"Call your father. Tell him we're in the middle of a heated bidding war and the house could be sold before the end of the week," Felicity ordered.
Nick looked at his aunts in surprise.
"Are you all really intending on selling Tyersal Park that quickly?"
"We need to close the deal while the wok is sizzling. It's almost Chinese New Year, and everyone is feeling particularly prosperous and bold right now. Do you know that our top bid now exceeds $3 billion?
Alex excitedly reported. Nick raised his eyebrows.
"Who is it from? And how will they ensure that they will preserve the house?"
Felicity laughed.
"Come on, Nikki. No one is going to preserve this house. The developers are only interested in the land. They are going to tear it all down."
Nick looked at Felicity in horror.
"Wait a minute. How can they tear down the house? Isn't this a protected heritage property?"
Victoria shook her head.
"If this was a Peranakan-style house, or a colonial black and white, maybe it would have heritage protection. But this house is such a mishmash of styles.
It was built by some Dutch architect that the Sultan, who originally owned the place, brought in from Malaysia. It's an architectural folly."
"But of course,
This is also what makes it so valuable. This is a freehold property with absolutely no heritage or zoning regulations. It's every developer's dream. Here, look at the leading proposal,
Alex said, handing Nick a glossy brochure. Zion Estates, a luxury Christian community. Imagine an exclusive gated community for high net worth families who share in the blessings of the Holy Spirit.
99 splendid villas inspired by the Hanging Gardens of Babylon, ranging from 5,000 to 15,000 square feet on half-acre lots, will surround Galilee. A glorious artificial lagoon complete with the world's tallest man-made waterfall supplied only with water imported from the River Jordan. At the heart of the community lies the 12 Apostles, a unique 12-hole golf course designed by our faithful brother, Tiger Woods. And an exquisite clubhouse, the King David, which will boast a trinity of world-class restaurants operated by Michelin-starred chefs, along with Jericho, sure to become Singapore's most decadent spa and state-of-the-art health club. Come to Zion. Live abundantly and be saved.
Nick looked up from the brochure in disbelief. Are you seriously telling me that these people are the front-runners? A luxury Christian community?
Isn't it inspired? It's Rosalind Fung's company. Your mother goes to her Christian fellowship banquets at the Fullerton. They've offered us $3.3 billion, and they will throw in a villa for each of us, Victoria said breathlessly.
Nick was barely able to hide his disgust.
Auntie Victoria, in case you've forgotten, Jesus served the poor.
Of course he did. What's your point?
Felicity chimed in.
Jesus said, to grow rich is glorious.
Actually, Deng Xiaoping, the late communist leader of China, said that. Nick shot back. He got up from the table abruptly and said to Rachel, let's get out of here. As they got into Nick's father's vintage Jaguar XKE convertible and sped down the driveway, Nick turned to Rachel.
Sorry, I lost my appetite sitting there with my aunts. I just couldn't stand listening to them 1 minute longer.
Trust me, I get it. Where are we going?
I thought I'd take you to my favorite restaurant for a proper lunch. Sun Yik Noodles. It's a little cafe that's been around since the 1930s.
Fantastic! I was just starting to get hungry.
Within 15 minutes, they had arrived in the Chinatown neighborhood, and after parking the car, they strolled down Club Street with its picturesque old shop houses toward Anxiang Road as Nick began to fill Rachel in on the place.
It's a total hole in the wall, and they haven't even changed the formica tables since the 50s, I bet. But they have the best noodles in Singapore, and so everyone comes here. The former Chief Justice of the Supreme Court used to eat lunch here every day because the noodles were so addictive. You're gonna die when you taste these noodles. They are hand-pulled egg noodles, and they have this incredible, perfectly chewy texture to them. And they serve it with braised chicken that's been simmering for hours in this garlicky gravy. Oh, man, the gravy. I want to see if you think you can possibly replicate it.
We're here after lunch rush, so we probably won't have to wait too long for a
Nick stopped dead in his tracks, staring at a facade across the road that had been covered by a metal construction fence.
What's wrong?
This is it.
Sun Yik Noodles.
But where is it?
They crossed the street and came to a small sign that was glued to the metal sheeting. It read,
Tory Burch, opening summer 2015.
Nick ran into the shop next door, and Rachel could see him gesturing frantically to the baffled salesman inside. A few moments later, he came outside, his face registering nothing but shock.
It's gone, Rachel.
No more Sun Yik.
This area has become so trendy.
The original owner's son apparently sold the building for an insane amount of money and decided to retire.
And now it's going to be a friggin' Tory Burch boutique.
I'm so sorry, Nick.
What the fuck?
Nick yelled, kicking the metal sheeting angrily. He sank down onto the pavement and covered his face with his hands despondently. Rachel had never seen him look quite so upset before. She sat down next to him on the pavement and put her arm around his shoulder. Nick sat there for a few minutes, staring off into space. After a while,
he finally spoke. Everything I love about Singapore is gone, or it's disappearing fast. Every time I'm back, more and more of my favorite haunts have been closed or been torn down. Restaurants, shops, buildings, cemeteries, nothing is sacred anymore. The whole character of the island I knew growing up is almost completely obliterated. Rachel simply nodded. Sun Yik was such an institution, I thought it would always be safe. I mean, I swear to God, they had the best noodles in the whole world. Everyone loved it. But now it's gone forever. And we can never, ever get that back.
I don't think people ever realize what they've lost until it's too late, Rachel said.
Nick looked into her eyes with a sudden intensity. Rachel, I have to save Tyersal Park. I can't let it be torn down and turned into some grotesque gated community that only allows in millionaire Christians. I've been thinking the same thing. I thought for a while that I would be okay with everything. I thought I wouldn't care if I didn't inherit the estate as long as someone in the family got it and maintained it properly, but now I know I'm not.
You know, I've been wondering all along if you were really okay with losing the house, Rachel observed.
Nick considered what she'd said for a moment. I think part of me always resented Tyersal Park in a subconscious way, because everyone always associated me with the house, and I could never detach from it when I was younger. I think that's why Colin and I became such good friends. I was always the Tyersal Park boy, and he was always that Coup Enterprises boy. But we were just boys.
It was like a curse in a way, wasn't it? It's amazing how you both managed not to let it define you, Rachel remarked.
Well, at some point I made my peace with it. And getting away also helped me appreciate it in a new light.
I realized how much the place nurtured me. How I found my adventurous side climbing trees and building forts. And how spending all those hours in the library reading all my grandfather's old books. Winston Churchill's memoirs. Sun Yat-sen's letters. Got me fascinated with history. But now, it feels like I'm seeing my entire childhood sold off to the highest bidder.
I know, Nick. It's been so painful even for me to watch on the sidelines. I just can't believe how it's happening so quick, and how your aunts, who also grew up in the house, don't seem to care about letting it go.
Even though my grandmother's will clearly states what it does, I don't think she would have wanted Tyersal Park to be demolished and forgotten like this. To me, there are so many things that just don't add up with my grandmother's will and everything.
That's been my suspicion all along, too. But I didn't feel like it was my place to say anything,
Rachel said with a frown. I wish I had more time to dig deeper and figure out why my grandmother wanted the house sold off like this. But things are moving so fast with my aunties.
Wait a minute. Your aunties can move as fast as they want, but you hurt them yourself. Nothing is going to happen without your father. As far as I know, he's somewhere in Sydney sipping a well-made cappuccino. And how about Alistair? He's got a stake in all this, too.
Come to think of it, Alistair hasn't been around the house much over the past few days, has he?
Nick said. If your father, Alistair, and you join forces, the three of you have enough votes to block any sale.
Nick kissed Rachel excitedly and leapt up from the pavement. You're brilliant, you know that?
I'm not sure that required much brilliance.
No, you're a genius. And you just gave me the best idea. Let's go call my dad.
Chapter 12. The Helena May, Hong Kong. Astrid walked into the dining room at the Helena May, Hong Kong's historic private ladies' club, and Isabel Wu waved to her from her table by the window. She strode toward Charlie's ex-wife a little trepidatiously. It was only the third time they were meeting, and the last time in Singapore hadn't gone so well.
Astrid, thank you so much for agreeing to meet me for lunch. I know it's your last day in Hong Kong, and you must be so busy,
Isabel said, getting up from her chair and giving Astrid a peck on the cheek. Thank you for inviting me. I love coming here.
Yes. It's such a special place, isn't it?
There are very few places like this anymore. Astrid took a moment to look around at the other smartly dressed ladies having lunch together. The dining room, with its Queen Anne furniture and botanical prints covering the walls, was a throwback to another era when Hong Kong was a British Crown colony, and this was the exclusive bastion for all the wives of high-ranking officials and expatriates. It was all so civilized. Astrid was relieved by such a warm welcome from Charlie's ex-wife, and glad to see Isabel looking so well and so chic in white jeans, a rose-colored cashmere sweater with a quilted vest thrown over it. She looked the epitome of Hong Kong old money.
What have you been doing since you got here?
Astrid hesitated for a moment. She didn't think it would be a good idea to tell Isabel that she'd spent most of the week planning her upcoming Hong Kong wedding. And yesterday, Charlie had taken her to see the breathtaking new house he had built for them in Shekou.
Not much, really. I've just been decompressing. It's good to be away from Singapore, you know. Yes. The past few weeks must have been very hard on you. I'm so sorry about your grandmother's passing. She was a great lady, from everything I know. Thank you. As I told you in my note, I was very close to my ama. In fact, she used to bring me here for afternoon tea once a month. So this place holds many memories for me.
My grandmother used to take me to afternoon tea as well. One of my earliest memories, I think, is of having tea with her at the Raffles in Singapore. But soon after that, she stopped going out.
So she became a recluse? Isabel asked.
Yes and no. She didn't go out much, but that's because she felt that the standards had slipped everywhere. She had very exacting standards, and she didn't much care for restaurant food. So she only went to friends' houses, the ones that she knew had good chefs, or she entertained at home. She liked to have people over all the time, and she was very social up until the end of her life.
Sounds like quite a character. All the women of her generation, like my grandmother, were characters.
My grandmother was known as the Hat Lady. She had the most incredible collection of hats, and she never left the house without one. The waitress came over and took their orders. After Astrid ordered the cream of asparagus soup, Isabel looked across the table at her with an almost embarrassed look.
You know, I have to confess, I've been so nervous all morning about this lunch. I am still so mortified over what I did when I was in Singapore.
It's fine, really. I'm just happy to see you so well again.
Those women whom I scolded. Was one of them a nun or something? Is she okay? I have such a strange memory of that day. Because I remember everything, you know, but I just had no control over my actions.
A nun?
Astrid didn't know what she was referring to.
I remember the look on her face when I threw that soup. Her eyes got so huge, and she had Tammy Faye levels of mascara on. She was wearing a nun's habit.
Oh, you're talking about the Dowager Sultana of Perawak. She was wearing a hijab. She was fine. The soup hardly touched her.
Don't worry. It was probably the most thrilling thing that's happened to her in decades.
Well, I appreciate your understanding. And I really must thank you for taking such good care of my daughters during that difficult time.
Don't mention it. Chloe and Delphine are lovely girls.
Isabel paused for a moment and looked out the window at the view of the hillside park. It was apparent to Astrid that she was going through a spectrum of emotions.
Soon, you will be their stepmother. You'll be spending much more time with them, and I'm actually glad they will have you in their lives, not just their crazy mother.
Astrid reached out and put her hand over Isabel's.
Don't say that. You've done such a great job raising them. You're their mother, and I'm not going to try to be any sort of substitute mother.
I only hope that in time they will come to see me as a friend.
Isabel smiled.
Astrid, I'm so glad we are having lunch together. I feel like I finally know who you are now.
After lunch, as the two of them stood at the entrance of the Helena May on Garden Road, bidding farewell to each other, Isabel asked,
What are you going to do now? Some shopping in Central? Can my driver drop you off anywhere?
Well, I'm leaving for Singapore in a few hours, but I'm going to meet with Charlie first. I think he's at the house, waiting for me to make some decisions about the decor.
The new house in Shek O?
I'd love to see it sometime. After all, Chloe and Delphine are going to be spending half their lives there.
Of course! Actually, if you're free, why don't you come with me right now?
Oh, well, I wouldn't want to intrude,
Isabel said hesitantly.
No, no, I'm sure it will be fine. Let me just text Charlie.
Astrid quickly shot off a text.
Astrid Leong.
Hey, just finishing up with Isabel. It went great.
Charlie Wu. I'm so glad.
A.L. Isabel would like to see the house. Okay if I bring her?
C.W. Sure, if you don't mind.
A.L. Of course not. See you soon.
Let's go, Astrid said, looking up from her phone. The two of them jumped into the back of Isabel's chauffeured Range Rover and sped off. As they made their way around the south side of Hong Kong Island, the landscape began to change dramatically as the dense skyscrapers that cascaded down the mountainside gave way to picturesque bays and ocean vistas. The winding highway took them through Repulse Bay and its crescent-shaped beaches, hugging the coastline as they passed Deepwater Bay and the village of Stanley. Finally, they arrived in Shek O, a historic fishing village on the southeast corner of Hong Kong Island, which was also home to one of the world's most exclusive neighborhoods.
Charlie's always longed to live here, but I would never let him. I prefer being closer to town. I could never live way out here in the middle of nowhere. I'm too much of a city girl, Isabel remarked, as they pulled up in front of an imposing metal gate with an attached gatehouse.
There's no one there, the chauffeur said.
Oh, we don't have it staffed yet. Just enter 110011 into the keypad,
Astrid said, glancing at the instructions Charlie had texted her. The gate slid open silently, and they proceeded down the long driveway to the house. Rounding the corner, the oceanfront villa, cantilevered on a rocky cliff, came into view.
This place is so Charlie,
Isabel laughed as they drove up to the imposing series of contemporary structures designed by Tom Kundig, clad in steel, limestone, and glass.
Your house on the peak is more traditional, isn't it?
Astrid inquired.
I'm not sure where you heard that, but it's classical Palladian, built in the 20s. I have it done in a French provincial style. I wanted it to feel like a manor in Provence. You must come over the next time you're back.
I've heard that it's one of the most elegant houses in Hong Kong, Astrid said.
They stepped out of the car and entered a large courtyard dominated by a reflecting pool. Here, the walls of the main villa were made entirely of glass, allowing for a seamless transition between the inside and outdoors. Entering the house, Astrid was once again taken aback by the spectacular ocean views from every vantage point in the house. In the great hall, an immense window perfectly framed a tiny island just beyond the coastline, and stepping into the living room, a wall of windows opened onto the terrace where an infinity pool ran along the entire side of the house, its horizon line melding into the South China Sea. As Charlie came around the corner to greet them, Isabel graciously offered,
Charlie, you've outdone yourself. You finally have your dream house by the sea.
I'm glad you approve, Izzy. We're still quite away from being done, and we've just received the first big pieces of furniture, but here, let me show you Chloe and Delphine's private wing.
After giving Isabel a tour of her daughter's rooms,
The three of them entered the dining room, where an immense vintage George Nakashima dining table had just been delivered. Standing around the free-form structure that resembled an immense piece of driftwood, Charlie looked at Astrid.
What do you think? Is it too Pacific Northwest?
Astrid considered the piece for several moments.
I love it. It goes great under the Lindsay Adelman chandelier.
Phew, I'm so relieved, Charlie said with a chuckle. Isabel stared up at the bronze-like fixture that resembled blown glass bubbles budding from the stems of an intricate tree branch, saying nothing. In her former life as Mrs. Charles Wu, she would have vetoed all of this. But now, as the three of them headed for the front door, she simply said, I do think Chloe and Delphine will love it here.
Well, you will always be welcome,
Astrid said, her heart soaring that Isabel was being so agreeable about everything. It had been such an unexpectedly lovely day. As they stepped outside into the courtyard, Astrid's phone pinged, and she saw four text messages suddenly pop up. Ludovine Dolan.
I went to pick up Cassian after school, but found out that his father already got him.
Felicity Leung.
Where are you? What time you getting back tonight? Come straight to Tyersal Park. So much happening with the house. We need you.
Oliver Sen. Aren't you friends with Prince Alois of Liechtenstein? And that poet Prince Faza of Dubai? Can you connect us? Call me. We'll explain. Ludovine Dolan.
Just spoke to Mr. Thieu and asked if he needed me to help with Cassian. But he wants me to take the rest of the day off. No idea what's happening.
Astrid put her phone back into her purse, suddenly feeling a bit sick to her stomach. Why the hell did she have to go back to Singapore? Chapter 13 Bondi Beach, Sydney.
Are you fishing on your dock?
Nick asked when his father picked up the phone. He could hear the crashing waves along the seashore.
No, I'm doing the cliff walk from Bondi to Coogee right now.
I love that hike.
Yeah, it's a good day for it.
You know your mother invited Daisy, Nadine, Lorena, and Carol to Sydney? The whole gin gang's here, and it's such a toilet seat down invasion. I needed to get out of the house. The ladies are busy hatching some kind of plot, I think involving Tyersal Park. That's the reason I was calling, Dad. It looks like things are moving far too quickly with the house. Your sisters seem really primed to sell it to the highest bidder, and I don't even want to tell you what those developers have planned.
Does it even matter? Once we sell it, the new owners can do whatever they want.
But I feel like everyone's losing sight of the big picture, Nick argued. Tyersal Park is a unique property, and we need to make sure that it's preserved. I mean, I'm at the house right now, and even just looking out the window onto the gardens, the rambutan trees are bearing fruit and they are flaming red. There's nothing quite like it.
I think you're being too sentimental, Philip said.
Maybe I am, but I'm just surprised that no one else cares about this house in the way that I do. Everyone's just seeing dollar signs while I see something so rare that needs to be protected. Philip sighed.
Nikki, I know for you this house was like some never-never land. But for the rest of us, it was a bit of a prison. Living in a palace was no fun as a kid. I grew up with nothing but rules. There were so many rooms I wasn't even allowed to enter. Chairs I couldn't sit in because they were too valuable. You have no idea because by the time you came along, my mother was a very different person.
Yes, I've heard the stories. But surely you must have some good memories.
To me, it's just one gigantic headache. Don't forget, I was shipped off to boarding school practically as soon as I could walk, so it never truly felt like home to me. Now, even the thought of having to come back to Singapore to deal with all these property folks fills me with dread. Do you know how many ACS old boys have called me up out of the blue to invite me to lunch, to golf, all that nonsense. People I haven't seen in eons are suddenly behaving like my best friend because they can smell the money. I'm sorry that's happening, Dad. But let me ask you something. Nick took a deep breath as he prepared to make his pitch. If I can somehow raise the money, would you consider leveraging your 30% stake and joining me and possibly Alistair to buy everyone else out? If you give me a little time, I know I can find a way to make it financially worthwhile for us to own the estate. The line went silent for a moment, and Nick wasn't sure if his father was upset or if he was just on a particularly arduous stretch of the hike. Suddenly, he spoke up again. If you care that much about Tyersall Park, why don't you handle this whole house sale? Do what you think is best. I'll give you permission to act as my proxy, power of attorney, whatever they call it. In fact, I'll sign over my 30% stake to you right now.
Really?
Nick said, not quite believing what he was hearing. Sure. I mean, it's all going to be yours one day anyway.
I don't even know what to say.
Do whatever you want with the house. Just keep me out of it, Philip said, climbing along the edge of a beautiful cliffside cemetery overlooking the South Pacific. Nicky, I'm up at that cemetery by Bronte now. Will you make sure... Yes, Dad. You've told me many times before. You want to be buried there. You want to have a view of the humpback whales doing backflips for all of eternity. And if they run out of lots, you find another oceanside spot? New Zealand, Tasmania, any place but Singapore.
Of course,
Nick laughed. He hung up the phone and found Rachel staring at him curiously. That sounded weird from what I heard. Yeah, it was one of the weirdest calls I've ever made. I think my father just gave me a share of Tyersall Park.
What?
Rachel's eyes got huge. He told me he'd sign over his stake, and I can do whatever I want as long as I leave him out of it.
What's the catch?
There's no catch. My dad has never been interested in financial matters at all. He really would rather not be bothered with it.
I guess when you've been born with it,
Rachel shrugged.
Precisely.
I still can't believe how easy it was to convince him, though. I thought I was going to have to fly down to Sydney and grovel on my knees.
With your father's share in your hands, you're the biggest stakeholder now, Rachel said excitedly.
No, we are. And this gives us the leverage to stall the bidding war and buy some time.
Do you want to go downstairs and break the news to your aunties?
Nick grinned. No time like the present. They left their bedroom and walked over to the drawing room, where Felicity, Victoria, and Alex were all sitting, unusually silent.
I have an announcement to make, Nick said boldly.
Felicity had a peculiar look on her face.
Nicky, we just got off the phone. It seems we have a new offer on the table.
I have an offer to propose as well.
Well, this is a very unusual offer. It comes from someone who wants to preserve the house entirely and not build a single new structure on the estate,
Alex said. Nick and Rachel exchanged looks of surprise.
Really? And they're offering more than those Zion people?
Rachel asked dubiously.
A great deal more. The offer is for $10 billion.
Nick was incredulous.
$10 billion?
Who on earth would want to pay so much money and not develop the property?
It's some fellow from China. He wants to come and see the house tomorrow.
China?
What's his name?
Rachel asked. Felicity frowned.
If I recall correctly, I think Oliver said his name was Jack something. Jack Ting? Jack Ping?
Nick put his hand on his forehead in dismay.
Oh, God. Jack Bing.
24 hours earlier, Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia.
So she is the queen?
No, Kitty. She is the mother of the current Sultan of Perawak. So she's the queen mother, but she's called the Dowager Sultana, Oliver explained through his headset microphone as they rode together in the helicopter.
Ah, so I have to curtsy to her.
You certainly do,
She's as royal as it gets. And remember, only speak when you are spoken to.
What do you mean?
I mean, you're not allowed to speak to her. The Sultana initiates the conversation and gets to do all the talking.